You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire, 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa, kua Jemima Houston talking wa, no mai haere mai ki te wire mō tēnei rā. Kia ora and welcome to The Wire for Tuesday the 11th of August. My name is Jemima and I'm your host. And I'm joined by producer Hannah, who is actually currently doing some great work out in the newsroom on our election coverage. She'll be through in just a few moments. E whai aki nei, coming up on our show today, we are looking at housing this week for our election coverage. I speak to a principal policy advisor for the Salvation Army about the state of public housing in Aotearoa and what the organisation thinks a new government should focus on to meet the needs of the thousands of applicants that are now on the waitlist for public housing. Hannah looks into renting issues and the new amendments to the Residential Tenancies Act. She speaks to the Manawatū Tenants Union and New Zealand Property Investors Federation about the law amendments and what each group are seeking from a new government in terms of policy. He aha o whakaaro, we would love to hear your thoughts on any of these pieces, so tuku pā tui mai, you can send us a text on 5395 or wae mai rānei, give us a call in studio on 309 3879. Also, after the show, you can catch all of these stories and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com. I just thought I'd say a little bit about our election coverage for the next 6 weeks, taking you right up to Election Day on the 19th of September. The Wire is looking at a different policy area each week, beginning with housing this week, local economy, and we also look at environment, we're looking at foreign affairs, human issues, and health and the referendums over the next 6 weeks. So if you want to tune in, if you're particularly concerned about something such as the referendums, or you're particularly concerned about policy looking at the local economy, then we've got all the news and all the bits and pieces for you. We will be speaking to our different political representatives each day about those policy areas, and also doing some more investigative pieces about various areas that come under those wider policy umbrellas. So tune in, stay up to date. Really important to be informed when voting, so yeah, definitely keep listening to BFM. Let's get into it.
95 BFM News election coverage 2020, housing.
This week, the Wire teams are looking at housing for our election coverage. I am meant to be speaking to a range of National Party representatives who can speak on each policy area each week, and I was promised a representative from the National Party to speak on their housing policy today. However, I have not received contact from them this week. Hopefully, we will have an interview later in the week, however. Anyway, to go on with our investigation into issues regarding housing and housing policy, this week I looked into public housing. Towards the end of last week, it was reported that the waitlist for public housing is up 50% on this time last year, with 18,000 people registered as seeking social housing right now. When the coalition government came into power, there were just over 6,000 applicants on the social housing waitlist, so there has been a considerable increase over the last 3 years. The number of people that are eventually housed was also down 36% to 1,115 in the 3 months to June. The average time it took to house these people was 237 days, 20 days longer than last quarter. The National Party has reportedly slammed the coalition government for failing to deliver housing under the Kiwi Build scheme. The Greens have recently pledged to ramp up the construction of houses with their Homes for All campaign policy, which aims to provide all 18,000 people on the public housing waitlist now into social housing in the next 5 years. I spoke to Ronji Taneleo, who is a lawyer and principal policy advisor for the Salvation Army, about the increase in public housing in the public housing waitlist. We talk about what promises the current government made in terms of public housing and whether they've been met, and what the Salvation Army hopes to see the new government do to combat New Zealand's lack of social housing. Here that is. Currently, the waitlist for public housing is up 50% on the same time last year. Why is this?
Look, the reality is there's just not enough houses for people to go into. We're not surprised by these numbers. I mean, when this government came in, there was about 6,000 people on the waiting list, and it sort of jumped to 18,000. That's not just this government's fault, but basically there's just more housing need, more housing stress, and not enough houses to house people.
Do you think it's a particular timing thing that's caused that jump, or is it to do with not enough houses being built fast enough with Kiwi Build, or is it just sort of an amalgamation of various things?
Yeah, I think it's all of the reasons that you mentioned. These numbers have been trending up for the last 3 to 5 years, so that isn't just a brand new change. COVID hasn't helped, obviously, and so government did, I think, a great job in trying to house people during the level 4 and 3 lockdown, which was admirable. But at the same time, having a strategy that's built around motels and hotels is not the best long-term strategy for whānau, especially whānau going through some really tough times. So it's a whole bunch of reasons, Jemima. But I think one of the key ones is that this housing stress is more visible now. So I think that's a good thing, to show that people are actually saying, look, we are sleeping in a car, we're sleeping in a cow shed, we need some help. And that's a good thing. It's not hidden maybe as previous years or generations. It's actually more visible.
And why do you think it is more visible? Is it that people have the confidence to come out and say they need help?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think it's also that there's more community service providers and NGOs and Christian groups working out there in the community, engaging frontline, seeing the need, encouraging people to not be whakamā, to not be ashamed about some of this stuff, and to also let them know that there is help. And I think that's I guess for us as a Salvation Army, we're really blessed that people have the confidence to come out and ask for help. There's still hidden homelessness, but at the same time, that's one of the major reasons why there's been such a spike in these numbers.
What option do people on the wait list have? Where are people on the wait list living?
Yeah, there's a couple of options that I think this government and the previous government have tried to build because they could see that there was more people that are jumping on the register. And so you've obviously, there's a strategy around hotels and motels, and that's where a lot of our clients, a lot of our whānau are going to. We house people ourselves. There's other social housing providers that are non-government organizations like the Salvation Army and the Methodist Mission and others that are housing people, which is wonderful. And there's also a transitional housing program as well that government has. And so that's usually a 12-week stay, and they come in through organizations like us. They're on the register, but they're temporarily housed with us, and then the idea is to transition them to a long-term sustainable house. So there are some options, probably not the best options at scale and not the best options long-term, but there are some decent options out there for families on the register.
I wanted to talk a little bit about long-term living and emergency housing. How realistic is it to be living in emergency housing situations such as a motel long-term? Are motels willing and able to take on people on the wait list for public housing, or is there always sort of a time limit for how long people can stay?
Look, there's some, government's bought some motels right out. So they own these, they're working with the motel sector. So there's an engagement there. So to answer your question about whether they're willing, they are getting paid for it. So when you're paid for something, then you're very willing to engage in that process. So there's definitely a desire from the motels to have this business, really. And I think the Salvation has always challenged that as a business model, to be paying millions of dollars into motels to temporarily house people. And so we've always thought that that's not the best strategy, but it's the most rushed strategy to try and plug the gaps. But we really believe that with the transitional housing 12-week stay program, that's a really good way forward. But again, Jemima, it's not the best long-term strategy. At this stage, it takes about 237 days on average to house someone on the register. So if that person is spending 237 days in a motel or a transitional house or homeless, then that's not the best outcome for them. So it's not just, there needs to be an intermediary, fill the gap option, but there definitely needs to be something that we push them to that is long-term, sustainable, warm, affordable, and so on. So look, motels love the business, government's paying it, but it's not the best long-term strategy.
What, in your opinion, is the best long-term strategy? What should, say, a new government after this election be doing to make long-term change?
Look, housing is probably one of the most complex social issues, maybe the most complex social issue that we're dealing with in the country. Salvation Army has always advocated for two direct, what we believe is pretty straightforward points. Firstly, we need more houses. That sounds a bit silly, but that's really what it is. We just don't have enough public houses or social houses out there. So we need to be building more. We need to be building the right types of houses for the people on the register. I mean, I don't know if you've looked at the numbers, but there's been an increase of younger people that are jumping on the register now. So those aged 24 and under. So which shows that it isn't just the middle-aged or elderly issue. There are more people jumping on who are 24 and under. So it needs to be, we need to be building more houses that are fit for purpose. And the second thing we've constantly pushed for is that the government needs to work more with the community housing sector. We are a sector that knows how to work with whanau in these spaces. We have been doing this for over 130 years, so we have some experience in this. And so if the government was willing to partner more with the community housing sector, that would be, a huge win to deal with some of the issues that for people that are on the register. Complex issues, complex answers, but that's what we've pushed for, more houses and work more with the community housing sector.
Now, you've said this is a complex issue, and I understand that, but because it is a complex issue, do you think that public housing is going to be a priority for political parties campaigning over the next few weeks in this election?
Yeah, well, if it isn't, then it should be, because it's, for us, the housing question is related to pretty much every social issue that comes in through our front doors with the 120,000 people that use our services. So housing should be, it must be a priority in this election. I mean, the Greens released their housing policy, their public housing policy a couple of days ago. Look, I've read through that. I'm not fully convinced on it. But at least they're thinking, at least they're putting some thought behind what to do with this. And so over the next couple of weeks, all the parties will come out with all their promises. But, you know, to be honest, you know, with elections, remember, it's, you can promise a million and one things, but what we're really after is action. It's not just a bunch of empty words or great promises that get votes. We need action. We need urgent action. If 18,000 applicants, it's not people, it's applicants that are on the register. That represents thousands or possibly tens of thousands more of whānau, of children. So that's the most urgent question, and we need urgent action.
So let's talk a little bit about government promises. What were the government's promises regarding public housing this term, and have those promises been fulfilled?
Look, the whole Kiwi Build story's been talked about and I think overdone. And look, it failed. It was a big mess. But not every policy and promise is going to work. And so we have acknowledged that. We've tried to work with government regardless of the failure of Kiwi Build. And look, there's been a bit of progress. And so I think that's probably the biggest one that has been a challenge for us. And I think the other thing that people need to think about is the people that are renting. So if you put pressure back on the renting sector, then that does put pressure back on the public housing sector. So all of these things are interconnected. And so one of the things that we had really hoped to see during this government's tenure was some real good changes around the Resource Management Act, and some real decent changes around the Residential Tenancies Act. There's been some pretty significant changes in the RTA, but with the RMA, there hasn't been as many major changes. So, look, there's been a whole bunch of promises from this government that haven't worked out, and we can understand that. We don't like that, but at the same time, we need to continue to work with whoever's in power to try and house our most vulnerable whānau.
Now, just finally, circling back to the beginning when we were talking about people being more open of the fact that they need help with housing. Housing Minister Chris Fahafoe told RNZ that he rejected the notion that this government had failed in providing affordable housing and said that people were now joining the waitlist because they believe they will get a property eventually. What are your thoughts on that comment?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think Chris is taking the government line, and I think and the Salvation Army has acknowledged publicly and privately to Chris that those intermediary gaps, the transitional housing stuff, the motel strategy, all that kind of stuff, that's been decent. Hey, those are rush solutions to try and deal with urgent issues. But at the same time, I think KiwiBuild, we believe KiwiBuild was a major failure, but the government, the country seen that as well. So look, at the same time, we're not going to fully agree or support everything that they do. We want to commend them when they do well and challenge them when we believe that it's not working. So at this stage, the public housing question still hasn't been solved. The numbers are continuing to go up. The government has tried. And some of the things they've missed, and they've made some big promises for if they come into power again. And so we want to hold them to account to that. And we hope to see that 18,000 applicant number on the register decline. So, look, there's no perfect policy. There's no perfect party. But there's been some good hits from this government and some pretty big misses. And so we want to... We really want to wait and see whoever comes into power in the future, and we want to hold them to account. But again, I come back to that point, Jemima, it is around urgent action. Hey, and so we can promise till the cows come home, but we really need action. So whoever this incoming government will be, whether it's the current one or brand new one, we need action. We need desperate action to try and get people off this register.
95 BFM News Election Coverage 2020.
We will be right back after this with some more election coverage. This is Confetti by She's So Rad. You're listening to 95 BFM.
Thank you. Why is a dog like a tree?
It's 6:15. Go back to bed.
Because both of their barks are rough. Hey!
I don't even have work today. Why am I awake?
Waking up with laughter makes your whole day nice.
I'm not laughing.
You'll get it in a minute.
Mornings are no joke. Start your day on the right foot with the 95 BFM Wake Up Call. A smooth tune lovingly selected by Rachel herself every weekday on breakfast. The 95 BFM Wake Up Call. Thanks to Espresso Workshop.
Enrolling to vote is easy. If you're not enrolled, if you're not sure, or if you just need to update your details, it only takes a couple of minutes to get you sussed and sorted for participating in the democratic process. Don't put it off. Don't tell yourself it's probably fine. Do it now. I promise it won't hurt. Enroll to vote. Go to vote.nz.
Authorised by Campus Radio BFM Limited, 34 Princess Street, Auckland Central, Auckland 1010.
Well, my name is Chris, and I'm here to say, I'm looking for a flatmate in the Linnet's Grey. You gotta be cool, and you gotta be tough. You gotta be a vegan, and no pets or smokers.
Room in Freeman's Bay Cottage. Me, urban sophisticated wine expert, French cinema aficionado. You, educated, tidy, silent.
Room in flat, Mount Eden. Text Dave.
Whoever or wherever you're after, the 95BFM Accommodation Guide is here for you. Email your listing to accommodationguide@95bfm.com. The 95BFM Accommodation Guide, every Thursday on drive and online at 95bfm.com.
Decision 2020.
The Residential Tenancies Amendment Bill passed under urgency recently. It introduces the most sweeping changes to tenancy law in the last 30 years. The National Party have fiercely opposed this bill, so whether or not it remains is contingent on who forms the next government, which I think means that it is a very important election issue. I spoke to Ben Schmidt, coordinator for the Manawatu Tenants Union, about this to get his perspective. I started by asking what he thought of the amendment.
Well, it's great to finally see it get into Parliament, long overdue. I mean, it's some of the biggest changes we've seen to tenants' rights since 1986. Definitely a really positive step forwards, but at the same way, there's still a lot to be done for tenants. Nothing is being done to limit how much landlords can put the rent out by, while at the same time, in the last week, I've already spoken to a couple of tenants facing rent increases of $100, and this bill does, frankly, nothing for them. Some of the other issues, like regulating property managers, getting a rental warrant of fitness in place, still need to be addressed. So it is good, and it is a really great step towards housing being a human right, rather than giving landlords all power and control over tenants to terminate a tenancy without giving any reason. Now we're introducing that idea that actually there needs to be a reason. But the next step forwards from that is still getting the balance right and making sure that tenants are guaranteed a safe and stable roof over their head and that they can afford the rent. It's not putting them into hardship.
What were the positives with the bill specifically around security and safety?
Oh, a lot of positives with the bill. So getting rid of a landlord's ability to terminate a tenancy on 90 days' notice without cause is a fantastic move. That way, what that means is that tenants are less fearful around being kicked out or retaliated against if they do complain to their landlord about issues. Yep, they had legal protections around that in the past, but it's really difficult to prove and to put that into practice. Also increasing the notice periods for some situations from 42 to 63 days, like if the landlord wants to move into the property, is, again, it's a small positive step which does recognise that it's the tenant's house, it's their home first and foremost, and also in the current housing crisis, tenants need more time to find other accommodation. That said, though, a lot of tenants are still struggling to find housing within those timeframes, and it's even just some of the smaller things as well, improving protections for tenants to make minor amendments to the property is just about recognising that it's your home and you should be able to live in it, use it, put the pictures up, secure a shelf like you would in any other home. We are also really excited and pleased to see the introduction of protections for family violence survivors. this is something that we've been lobbying really hard for. And with these changes, someone who has to leave a tenancy due to family violence will be able to give 2 days' notice to either terminate the tenancy or take themselves off the tenancy, provided they've got some sort of supporting statement, which is a massive win for people in those situations who are really vulnerable and previously had to potentially go through the tenancy tribunal process to get themselves off a fixed-term tenancy, which is inappropriate, unfair, didn't work. So that's certainly one change that we are really excited about.
What was it like for renters previous to this? What have you witnessed as a tenant advocacy group?
Yeah, the biggest issues we usually see for tenants are evictions and terminations of tenancies, whether that's been given a 90-day notice, potentially lawfully, or you just don't have anywhere else to go, and looking at how we can try and extend that, change it, and ensure that the tenants get a fair go, following that really substandard housing, cold, mouldy, damp houses, and also quiet enjoyment, your right to actually live in your home in peace and quiet without being harassed by your landlord are the main issues that we deal with, and a whole host of other things in between. To be honest, I don't expect that to change substantially either with the bill. Tenants are still going to face their tenancies ending, still living in cold, damp and mouldy houses. What it does do is it gives a little bit more protection, and it will also increase penalties substantially for landlords who are breaking the law, on average about 50-80%. So previously, for example, if your landlord wasn't maintaining your home, they weren't doing their job, you could be awarded up to $4,000 in damages at the tribunal. When this law comes into effect, that will be increasing to up to $7,200 in damages. So hopefully that will deter landlords, and it will also support tenants to get a bit more of a fair go when they go to the tribunal and acknowledge actually the impact of substandard housing, of tenancy issues on them.
Did you find that tenants found it difficult to stand up for themselves?
Oh, absolutely. There is a massive power imbalance between tenants and landlords. We see that in the previous and even in this legislation, where landlords are still able to terminate a tenancy for a whole range of reasons, and tenants are fearful. You're massively dependent on getting a good reference from your landlord as well to find another property, and that is something that landlords can hold over tenants. Going to the tribunal, it's a long process, it's a public process, and that we know that there are a number of landlords out there who, if they see that a tenant has been to the tribunal, they will be less likely to take the tenant on or just not take them altogether. So tenants are working from that massive power imbalance, which this bill does take some steps to remedy. What it will also mean is that tenants can apply to or can have the order or their name suppressed in a number of circumstances. If you're less worried about your name going on a public record as a tenant, you'll be more empowered to go to the tribunal and get a fair go that way.
So would you say that this legislation has shifted the balance of power between renters and landlords, but there's still further to go?
Yeah, it's certainly shifted the balance a little bit towards tenants in what is a really positive way, but there is a lot more to be done. It's shifted a little bit, but it's still really been tinkering around the edges of the current renting system and the Tenancies Act that we have.
National MP Alfred Nutter has called this bill the, quote, "I hate the landlord's bill." Do you think that this law is anti-landlord?
Absolutely not. What this bill does is it takes a very small step towards restoring a fair balance between tenants and landlords. It is absolutely not, by any stretch, an anti-landlord bill. I've actually spoken with several landlords myself who have said that they are quite comfortable with this bill. They've got nothing to worry about, and actually decent landlords do not have anything to be worried about with this bill. In fact, what it actually does is, in many ways, improves landlords' options around tenants now have to give more notice to end their tenancy. That is a negative impact on tenants that will benefit landlords. As much as we disagree with it, it's a part of the bill. There is now also going to be more clarity around when the tribunal can terminate a tenancy in the event of that lower level or ongoing antisocial behaviour, whereas previously that was much less defined. So actually, we're talking about some very minor, very sensible reforms to recognise the fact that over or approximately one out of every three households today is renting. It is not an anti-landlord bill by any means, and it has a lot more, a long way to go towards actually making life substantially better for tenants in New Zealand.
And what about concerns raised that the protections risk decreasing supply and driving up rents?
I think there's been a lot of scaremongering around the impacts of this bill. First of all, we know that it is really a minority of cases, according to most of the research that is cited, in which 90-day notices are used, let alone for antisocial behaviour. So actually you're benefiting the majority of tenants for something that the likes of the New Zealand Property Investors Federation acknowledge is not even a major issue when it comes to how often it occurs. Yep, there may be some landlords that will sell up their properties, but at the end of the day, being a landlord is a business, and it's also about putting a roof over someone's head. If landlords are not prepared to do that properly and professionally, then they should get out of the market. And what that will also do is free up more homes for first home buyers to purchase, or those homes will then be transferred to other landlords who will hopefully be prepared to follow the law and meet their obligations. So there's a lot of scaremongering, which I believe is massively overhyped, and we look forward to seeing the benefits to tenants that this bill will bring, although there's still a long way to go.
Earlier this week, a list was released detailing properties owned by MPs. Many own residential properties, while only 8 MPs do not own any property. How do you think this has shaped our tenancy laws?
Hugely. Very large numbers of MPs in Parliament who are landlords shows that that is not representative of our society, and it is certainly not representative of the day-to-day realities and challenges facing tenants. And we then see a number of MPs and parties which has been, frankly, inaccurate and are doing a lot of scaremongering around the bill and what it will mean. We also see the sort of moderating influence of MPs who maybe, even if they are seen as slightly more renter-friendly parties, who are not willing to tackle some of those more fundamental issues facing tenants, like out-of-control rent increases. So it's definitely an issue, very much the same when it comes to local council, local government level as well.
And just to close off, where would you like to see renting policies go with the next government?
There's a long way to go with renting policies. The priorities for us is that tenants need to pay a livable rent. You shouldn't be forced to choose between keeping a roof over your head and putting food on the table, which is why we need to see rent control legislation that will limit the ability of landlords to increase rents and ensure that no one should pay more than a living rent, which is internationally agreed to be around 25-30% of your income. Tenants are still stuck with the burden of being the ones to complain about issues with their property, being the ones who have to go to the tribunal if they are living in a dangerous and substandard house. That needs to change. The onus should be on the landlords to provide a warm, dry and healthy home, and that's why we need to see, and we really want to see, a rental warrant fitness system. Tenants are also being taken advantage of by cowboy property managers. It's something all of us, friends, family or ourselves, have had experiences with property managers who should either not be in the business or need to seriously improve their practice, which is why we want to see regulation of property managers in the government. And there's also a lot of people that are still falling between the cracks with the current tenancy legislation. if you are a flatmate, if you live in the same house, same premises as the owner, you're not covered under the Tenancies Act and you effectively have no rights. These are some often really vulnerable tenants who have no rights, and we really want to see the government take action to extend tenancy rights to these vulnerable tenants in whatever form, so that they actually have some kind of a legal protection to guarantee reasonable security and a safe roof over their heads. Those are the main issues we're wanting to see, but there's certainly a lot more to go that I'd be more than happy to talk about with anyone who wants to campaign for more change.
95BFM Democracy Cares.
Continuing on from the last interview, I sought an opposing view on renting issues. Just to reiterate first, the amendment makes changes to security and safety for renters. It removes no-cause evictions, it limits rent increases to once yearly, and it allows for minor changes like wall fittings and baby-proofing, among lots of other things. I spoke to Sharon Colwick, Executive Officer of the New Zealand Property Investors Federation, and I started by asking what her thoughts were on the amendments.
Well, we've got three main concerns with it. One is the inability for landlords now to use a 90-day no-cause eviction. Now, it's only used in 2% of cases, so it's a very small amount of tenants that get these 90-day no-cause evictions. So what it means is that we can terminate a tenancy just by giving the tenants 90 days to find somewhere else to live. They can move on from that property without having a bad tenancy record or anything like that. So now with the changes, we can't remove tenants from the property, which means that once you really put in a tenant, that tenant really is there for life until they decide to move out. The second point that we've got is that fixed-term tenancies automatically become periodic tenancies. So if you've got a fixed term for a year and then you both agree that you will move out, then that happens. But if you get to the situation that the tenant wants to stay and the landlord doesn't, then the tenancy actually continues at a periodic tenancy. So now, because we don't have the ability of asking people to leave in 90 days, it means those tenants can really stay as long as they like. There's a few things that we can't get rid of them. That we can get rid of the tenants out of the property, and that might be if we're doing a demolition on the property, we've got major renovations, or antisocial behaviour. They've done 3 counts of antisocial behaviour in 90 days. But that's really the only ways that we can remove a tenant from a property. So the third one really is that there's a lot of penalties that are put on landlords if they get something wrong. So it used to be, prior to this Act, there was 24 unlawful acts against landlords. It's now increased to 60 unlawful acts against landlords and 24 pecuniary penalties of up to $100,000, which is improvement notices and enforcement undertakings, have all been added. So there's a lot of things that are actually against landlords.
On the no-cause evictions, this is something that tenancy advocacy groups have particularly celebrated, and just in the name no-cause evictions, it seems that there are still ways to evict tenants, there just need to be evidence, is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So now we have to get 3 forms of antisocial behaviour or something like that. But our main concern with this is, yes, the 2% of tenants that get it, but let's say you've got a block of 8 flats and you've got one tenant in one flat that causes a nuisance to everyone else. So what will happen is that bad tenant, who is disruptive and antisocial, will end up staying, and all the good tenants will end up shifting. So even though it's security of tenure, it's only security of tenure for bad tenants. A landlord needs someone in the property to pay the rent that then pays the mortgage. So landlords aren't in the business of removing tenants for no reason whatsoever. There's always a reason why we'd remove a tenant from a property.
But if the tenant's behaviour was so bad, wouldn't it meet the required standard under the new legislation anyway?
It would in certain cases, but not in others. I could give you another example. Let's say you've got a friend who's coming from overseas and you've decided that you're going to rent out your house for 1 year to someone because this friend of yours is coming back from overseas and you'd quite like them to live into your property. You can no longer remove those tenants, so your friend can actually move into your property. So really you're diminishing the landlord's rights of actually owning a property. It's their property. They should be able to choose what they do with their property. But with these regulations now, it doesn't seem that a landlord actually has a lot of rights over their own property.
But in an equal relationship between tenants and landlords, don't tenants deserve to have some sort of justification for why their landlord is evicting them?
Yes, they do. But often with some tenants, if you give them the reason why they're leaving or why they have to leave a property, it just gives them a signal, really, that they can do whatever damage they like to the property. For a landlord, we'd rather give them a 90-day notice that they can move out rather than telling them, the reason I'm giving you this, you know, this notice is because of this particular behaviour. Sure, people need the right to correct that behaviour, but to get three cases in 90 days, and you need to get your neighbours to make sure that they've, you know, they can verify what happened. Often it's the neighbours that are elderly, for example. They wouldn't want to put their name down or be known to have anything to do with the reason why that particular tenant is having to move out of their property. The new laws mean that it will have to be disclosed to the tenant who's actually complaining about them or who's actually put in some sort of notice of their disruptive behaviour, which we don't think is very good, especially not for elderly neighbours.
Your press release stated that these changes only protect the 2% of tenants that cause problems, and you mentioned that earlier in the interview as well. But that same press release also cautioned that this had inadequate protections for landlords against antisocial tenants. Why should policy affecting all renters be based on the behaviour of such a small proportion of them?
That's what we think too. So why should this legislation come through when really it's only helping the 2% of antisocial tenants? It's not helping the good 98% of tenants. We think there's between, we don't know, we think about between 9 and 12,000 tenants that get a 90-day notice per year, which is, it is quite a lot of people. But those 12,000 can affect 60,000 of their neighbours. So if you look at anyone who's actually around those particular households, so it actually affects a lot of people. So it does seem very unusual that they've made legislation that protects 2% of the population, whereas another 98% of the population are actually the ones that are suffering from this legislation.
But aren't most tenants suffering under increasing rents, et cetera, et cetera?
So increasing rents, it'll only get worse. The reason it'll get worse is because now landlords, when they are looking at potential tenants, because it's so hard to remove a tenant from your property, only those tenants that have impeccable credit history, that have impeccable references from their previous landlord, they'll be the only ones that get tenants. We know that there's about 18,000 people on the emergency housing list, and we know that will increase hugely by the time this legislation comes in, which will be in 6 months' time. It will be enormous. It will be very hard for someone who's got a bad credit rating or someone who's counted as a marginal tenant. So whether that be someone who's younger, whether it be someone who doesn't have references of where they've lived, whether it be someone who's shifted around a lot, they will not find a property they can rent off a private landlord because the risks for the landlord are just too great. If you can't remove a tenant on a 90-day no-cause, it will just make it very, very hard for those people to find a place to live in the private sector. And we know that the state only look after those people that are on some sort of benefit. So those people that are working, that have bad credit, they will find it very, very hard to find a house to rent. And rents will inevitably go up. All you're doing is reducing the supply.
Isn't that already the status quo in places like the Wellington CBD, to the point where the new legislation has had to ban rental bidding because that's what was happening?
Yeah, no, that's right. So what will happen now is they ban rental bidder, and they've also limited the amount of increases that you can do on rents to once per year. That's fine. We think that's actually quite a good idea. But what will happen, I'll just give you my example. I had purchased a house that was under-rented. So I said to my tenants, this is going up by $150 per week, but I'm going to do it in 6 month increments. So I did $50 after I've had it for 6 months. Then I put it up to extra $100 to $150. So I gave my tenants time that they could adjust to that. And I said to them, if you want to, you could find something else that's cheaper in the meantime, but this would be what your rent would be in a year and a half. Now what happens to once-a-year rent means that rents will have a huge increase just to bring them up to that particular market rent at the time. So instead of it being in increments, it'll be a big jump for a lot of people, which will be hard for them to handle financially through their budgeting and things like that.
What do you propose as an alternative solution to address rising rents and short supply?
The only way we can address it really is to increase supply of houses. So this, at the moment, the coalition government seems to be hell-bent on removing private landlords. What they should be doing is we own about 655,000 houses that are rented. So there's 290,000 private landlords in the country. What they should be doing is working with private landlords and working out ways that we can increase supply, not trying to squeeze landlords out of the market, because if you squeeze landlords out of the market, all you're doing is reducing the supply of rental properties. If first-time buyers move into the market, which is great, and we're all for first-time buyers moving into the market, but what happens is there's less people living in a first-time buyer's house than what there is in a rental property. So if a rental property is sold to a first-time buyer, that means you still need another house to house the leftover people. So all you're doing is making it worse. You're making the whole housing situation worse.
But if landlords are kind of looking at selling off their properties en masse in response to this and triggering a decrease in supply and still having a situation where rents continue to increase, isn't that an indictment of the rental market as a whole more than anything?
It is, but you need private landlords. You can't have, we can't just have state houses. There's not enough state houses. The government isn't the best at looking after and organising houses to be built. We've seen that in the past. They haven't been able to do it. National government sold off a whole lot of state houses, but they sold it to private. They sold it to. I can't think of what they're called. They sold them to community groups. So selling them to community groups like Salvation Army meant that they'd be equipped to look after those houses and to run those houses than what the government are. So that's probably the best way of doing it, rather than the government doing it through state housing. There's community groups that are formed, that are ready to do this. And yes, they're just as good as private landlords. So we need to work together and try and increase supply.
Where would you like to see tenancy policies go after the election?
Well, I think that landlords definitely need to have the right to remove a tenant with a 90-day no clause. As I've said, the landlord owns the house, so the landlord should have the right to live in that property. So the way that it's structured at the moment, all landlords' rights to their own property have actually been diminished. So that needs to change. Landlords own the houses. We provide a service of letting tenants stay in our houses. We should be able to decide who stays in our houses and who rents it from us, rather than being told that once you have someone in there, it's virtually a house for life. That doesn't work for us.
95 BFM Election Central.
What? Wow! Music's everywhere. It's like a cloud of art.
Here at 95 BFM, we've sucked up some of the best contemporary bangers, bottled them and chucked them into a special Spotify playlist just for you.
August features La Fonda, Baby Zionov, Vanessa Worm, Fable, and more.
Follow 95BFM on Spotify for our monthly Spotify playlist and stay au fait.
Think your KiwiSaver is no big deal? Getting it wrong could lose you hundreds of thousands of dollars. Get your free KiwiSaver advice today from Kōura. With some of the lowest fees in the country, their 100% Kiwi-owned and operated KiwiSaver scheme is personalised for you. Don't wait. Get the most out of your KiwiSaver today. Visit Kōura at kouraweealth.co.nz or call 0800 527 547. That's 0800 527 547.
Were you at the gig on Friday?
What gig?
The Radical Maris Noise Collective. I never thought seven dudes playing saxophones would change my mind about capitalism, but hello. Then 2 hours of Nightcore remixes of Every Time We Touch.
What even?
And a white guy did a rap about feelings. So beautiful.
What?
What? Stay in the loop with the 95BFM Entertainment Guide. Online and on air 7 days a week, three times a day. 10:20 a.m, 3 p.m. and 6:20 p.m. It's gigs in that.
95BFM News Election Coverage 2020. Housing.
That was The Wire.
The that was the Tuesday Wire for another week. We were just going to say a little thing. Somebody's texted in about that last interview with, what were they? The Property Investors.
New Zealand Property Investors Federation.
Yeah. Somebody texted in saying her argument has so many holes, it's like a crochet blanket. If only 2% are bad, meaning renters, then there must be 98% that are great tenants and should feel safe to stay in a long-term home. Yeah, so landlords need not to worry, I think is what that last bit means. But yeah, so interesting. It was good that Hannah got sort of both sides of the table there, you know, landlords, yeah, versus renters. I suppose it is a, yeah, interesting topic. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes as we head on towards the election. But yeah, and then afterwards, you know, what is the new government going to do? But thank you very much to everyone who spoke with us for the show today. And thank you very much, Hannah, for being a lovely producer, as always. Thank you to all of you who were listening and texted in and gave us a call. We always love hearing what you've got to say and what you think about the world and the pieces that we cover. So tune in for the rest of the week for some more election coverage on housing. And then next week, we're looking at local economy. If you've got anything you particularly want us to look at, you can always flick us a message on all of our social media at 95BFM News, or yeah, call in or text in on the show and we will have a look into it for you. But anyway, thank you so much. Enjoy what is it looking like a miserable afternoon, and we will catch you next time.